The Vril Society was a group of mediums inspired by theosophy and a contemporary book entitled The Coming Race, apparently the source of the Aryan philosophy that galvanized Nazi idealism. Contact was made through the Vril with beings claiming to be extraterrestrials from the Aldebaran star system. They professed to have benevolent intentions for humanity, and supplied the Vril mediums with advanced technical drawings that allowed German engineers to complete a working device. During the 1920s, Dr. W. O. Schumann, of the Technical University of Munich, successfully engineered an overunity engine capable of propelling German craft, directly as a result of these drawings provided by the Vril. His statements on the nature of how this device worked resemble Walter Russell, the visionary spiritual scientist that inspired Nikola Tesla. Russell asserted that the universe has essentially two primary principles, implosion and explosion, creation and destruction, organization and chaos, expressed in all phases of the universe. One example he cited was electromagnetism and its dipolar nature, or positive and negative properties. Dr. Schumann uses a different vernacular, but he is essentially referring to the same principles. Dr. Schumann had an unusual view of science and technology, believing in two opposing principles. Explosion, the work of Satan, and implosion, the divine principle. This idea was also held by the Templars, supposedly the secret knowledge discovered by Pythagoras. In everything we recognize two principles that determine the events. Light and darkness, good and evil, creation and destruction, as in electricity we know plus and minus, it is always either or. Dr. Schumann, the device appears to work like John Searle's SEG, an overunity motor capable of producing strange side effects such as healing, anti-gravity and heat reduction around the device when throttled. It gets cold instead of hot when greater loads are applied. What may be more intriguing about the story is the intended uses of this technology. The Vril Society wanted to travel to Aldebaran and further relations with the race there, whereas the Thule Society wanted to use the technology to power civilization. But a more secretive group apparently infiltrated both and had different intentions. Some have said this darker group was the Order of the Black Sun, and their goal was to weaponize the technology into spacecraft capable of crushing the enemies of the seemingly all-powerful Nazi Empire. But when the Allies began to defeat the Germans, this group began to break away from Germany, and apparently settled in South America and Antarctica, according to whistleblower Corey Good, who claims to have worked in the modern-day secret space program. The Germans found remnants of an advanced civilization in Antarctica. He also says that the Vril Society was not making contact with beings from Aldebaran, but were in fact contacting a race of ancient humans on Earth that fled underground tens of thousands of years ago, due to cataclysms and the fall of the surface population into barbarism. So they claim. Ultimately, which point perspective is correct remains unclear. In my view, the following narrative puts into context the ideals and goals of the earlier origins of the Vril and Thule Society, as individuals tried to make sense of the infinitely complex past. The more information we have to expand our knowledge, the more accurate our conclusions will be for shaping the future. At some point, the public became fixated on an old book called The Coming Race. It was written in 1871 by Anonymous, but many believe the author to be Edward Bulwer Latona, originally considered as science fiction. Many later readers believe that its account of a superior subterranean master race. Many theosophists accepted the book as truth. Then something really strange happened, contact with extraterrestrials. It was December of 1919. The head of the Thule Society, Karl Hoschafer, had invited a handful of the most respected occultists to meet at a secluded cabin in the forest foothills of the Alps. Near Berchtesgaden, the guests included a representative of the Knights Templar and a specialist in Asian artifacts. As they gathered together, Hoschafer revealed a surprise, Two young and exceptionally beautiful women joined the group. One of the young women was very quiet. She was barely 18 years old and, for some reason, her real identity was a guarded secret. She was introduced as Sigrun. Her significance will reveal itself later. The other woman was Maria Orzig. Aside from their stunning appearance, both had exceptionally long hair, contrary to the current vogue, that was worn in a ponytail. Hoshifer introduced them as trans mediums and announced that Maria had received a communication from an extraterrestrial civilization. Some of the communication was in the form of text, automatic writing, written by Maria in her altered state. She showed the group several pages with strange symbols. Hoshifer had the pages long enough before the meeting to have shown them around. He had determined that one was written in a secret Templar code while the other was in a Sumerian alphabet. Both had already been translated. The texts made some shocking claims, but offered proof of their validity. Instructions on how to build an anti-gravity engine. Leaving no stone unturned, Hoshifer even had the distinguished scientist, Victor Schauberger, review the physics of the design and literally sign off on its potential right. Maria explained that the civilization she contacted originated in the constellation Taurus, the Bull. In particular, they were from a planet that was in orbit around a star called Aldebaran. The engine works on an energy source that is called Vril. Claims were made that the anti-gravity engine also has the ability to alter time. The texts are detailed enough so that the engine could be built, tested, and then used to transport worthy humans to their world for a meeting, while the Thule Society was focused on mediumship and contact with the other. Their main interest was in finding an alternative to the inhumane and unhealthy industrial revolution that affected the German population. The anti-gravity engine was, according to Maria, a gift from this advanced race for humanity so that energy would be plentiful and wars would be unnecessary. But the Thule Society wanted the engine for its metrival potential. They dreamed of going back to the time when the gods walked the earth so they could learn more about spiritual truth. The guests believed what Maria had revealed. They agreed to seek financial support to build the engine from wealthy industrialists who were members of the Thule Society and other occult groups. Maria was quickly tasked with convincing contributors to help with this project. The Vril engine is built although they had the same objective, building the Vril engine. The Thule and Vril societies had different motives. The Thule Society was practical and foresaw a new energy source to exploit. The Vril were more concerned with making contact, learning from and potentially visiting the aliens on their world. In 1922, Thule and Vril jointly produced the JFM, Genzeich Flugmaschine, or Other World Flight Machine. It was just the engine and was bench-tested on a tether for 2 years. It was during this time that the anti-gravity and time distortion were noted. Without notice, the JFM was abruptly taken apart and shipped off to the Augsburg works of Messerschmitt for future use. The project had been led by Dr. W. O. Schumann, Technical University of Munich, who later developed a levitation unit from the research, which was called the Schumann Munich or SMLevitator. Dr. Schumann had an unusual view of science and technology, believing in two opposing principles. Explosion, the work of Satan, and implosion, the divine principle. This idea was also held by the Templars. Supposedly, the secret knowledge discovered by Pythagoras, in everything we recognize two principles that determine the events. Light and darkness, good and evil, creation and destruction, as in electricity we know plus and minus, it is always either or. These two principles, the creative and the destructive, also determine our technical means. Everything destructive is of satanic origin, everything creative is divine, every technology based upon explosion or combustion has thus to be called satanic. The coming new age will be an age of a new, positive, divine technology. Dr. Schumann, from SS Archives. The Vril engine did not consume, explode or destroy anything in its operation. It fit perfectly with the Thule philosophy and motivated full research as participation in this divine principle. The Thule society has been underestimated and virtually censored from our history books. Seemingly crazy laws outlaw the display or discussion of these societies in Europe today, but it is a fact that Thule was largely responsible for creating the Nazi Party, so much so that their occult symbols are synonymous with the Third Reich. The swastika, lightning bolts of the SS and the Iron Cross, symbol of the Black Sun are but a few symbols with occult origins above. As Thule became more concerned with politics and power, the Vril maintained their esoteric quests. All of the Nazi leaders were members of Thule and later, after Maria Orsic's revelation, joined Vril. Adolf Hitler, Alfred Rosenberg, Heinrich Himmler, Hermann Göring, and Hitler's personal physician, Dr. Theodor Moral, all of the inner circle were Vril and Thule members. The success of the JFM was wisely kept secret until 1933, when one of their own became the head of Germany. Hitler is said to have given the go to both Thule and Vril developing their own Gesellschafts. He understood that the technology was a potential weapon. The Vril supervised development of the RFC, Rundflugzeug, or Round Aircraft Series in 1937 next to the Otto Brandenburg Aircraft Facility. A series of RFC discs were tested there, culminating in the RFC-7. Meanwhile, Thule was working with a special SS unit, EIV, exploring how to exploit this apparently new energy. They had their own disc project in a secret location called Honeberg, and it was not tethered. Beginning in 1935, their disc above was known as the HGERAT, Honeberg device, eventually shortened to Honeyaboo. In 1939, the disc's trib work, thrust work, engine was perfected. Honeyaboo 1, codenamed RFZ-51, Thule moved it to the main testing facility in Otto Brandenburg. The Thule trib work had an electromagnet Shikravitic engine whose heart was a spinning tank of heated mercury and three parallel discs, rotating in opposite directions. Being a conductor, the mercury was made to interact with an electric field in such a way that it behaved like a superconductor and was able to isolate the immediate environment from local gravity effects. Some recent thoughts have compared the anti-gravity observations of monoatomic gold to what might be happening to the heated mercury. It has been noted that atoms not involved with cohesive bonds with other atoms, solitary atoms, gain back the energy usually expended in the bond and speed up and distort the orbits of their nuclear particles. These distortions somehow liberate the atoms from the effects of gravity. The anti-gravity engine only isolated the craft from gravity. It did not really levitate it, although the energy needed was greatly reduced because of the elimination of gravity. The disc craft still required some power to ascend and move through the atmosphere. Some versions of the disc had jet engines and reached 290,012,000 kilometers per hour. The Thule group eventually designed magnetic pulse thrusters that served to maneuver and propel the craft once they were in their anti-gravity state. As these magnetic thrusters had no explosion, they were the ideal solution. By 1944, Thule had produced a Honeyaboo series, including some really large discs that were capable of carrying 200 troops, like the huge 139-meter-long cylindrical mothership called the Andromeda Juret. Andromeda device. The triumph of the Vril group with their seventh vehicle, Vril 7, designed specifically for interplanetary travel. As the war turned in favor of the Allies, Thule moved their production facilities to a deep mine in Poland. They continued work on their discs with slave labor until the very end, at which time the mine was flooded then collapsed to prevent Allies from gaining access. It's believed that any discs that were at this facility were flown away, but some think at least one or two were captured. The site shows the foundation of a large electric generator with conduits leading to the center of a large concrete platform, still there today, right? Vril also made plans to evacuate, but their plans were a bit more elaborate. They had their best interplanetary disc, Vril 7, ready to take them to safety in a most unlikely place. Over the years since Maria Orsic had made contact, the Vrol had learned much about their telepathic, alien counterparts. In fact, the Vrol's information about the aliens had already transformed the war effort with submarines and supply boats diverting resources to, of all places, Antarctica. Aldebaran civilization. According to the Vrol mediums, the race of people they had telepathically contacted were from one of two inhabited planets that orbited an old star called Aldebaran, 68 light-years away in the constellation we know of as Taurus, the bull. On historical artifacts, they are always depicted with horns, right? They made contact because they had been observing human activity, specifically noting our warlike behavior. They decided to give humanity a gift, the Vrol engine, to eliminate the competition for resources and energy, the cause of human conflict. Millions of years ago, the Aldebaran people had evolved to utilize Vrol energy, akin to our understanding of electricity, but taken to an extreme. They had developed mental abilities such that they were able to interact with this Vrol energy, using it for creative or destructive purposes. In the course of their sun's life, it had expanded to become a red giant. The environmental conditions on the inhabited planets caused biological stress. The race degenerated to where they lost their mental abilities to use Vrol. When they realized this, they quickly isolated the pure Aldebaran race from those that degenerated and became strict about breeding and associating with the inferior strains. As the environment of their solar system deteriorated, the elite Aldebarans evacuated their race, both pure lines and inferiors, to other inhabited worlds. Earth was one of these. The Aldebaran race retreated from the surface to a subterranean cavity located under the continent of Antarctica, from where they have been observing and attempting to control human destiny. The Aldebarans realized that this was too strange for anyone to believe, but they pointed to the many abandoned megalithic sites around the globe as evidence of their past life on the surface. In any event, they were offering 100% proof with the plans for the Vrol engine. Once that was built and tested, the world would never be the same. Deutschland, we have a problem. It became evident to the Aldebarans, as well as the Vrol, that the gift had been used unwisely. Production of discs with gun turrets and remotely operated weapon discs contradicted the original motive. The Vrol visited the Aldebaran residents under Antarctica, as has been well documented, and began a program for populating a subterranean island called New Swabia. During the later years, it noted that the SS had implemented special breeding programs, similar to those of the Aldebaran race, with the offspring destined to occupy this Antarctic land. While we cannot know whether these facts about Aldebaran were real or imagined, the construction plans that the Vrol telepaths received were so accurate that they led to the successful construction of the Gensiege Flugmaschine, a flying machine for the other side. Eyewitness reports of Vrol in the 1957 case. Agents at Detroit recorded that they had spoken with a man who was born February 19, 1926, in the state of Warsaw, Poland, and was brought from Poland as a prisoner of war to Gut-Alt-Gulsen, approximately 30 miles east of Berlin, Germany, in May 1942, where he remained until a few weeks after the end of World War II. An SS guard appeared and talked briefly with the German driver of the tractor, who waited 5 to 10 minutes, after which the noise stopped and the tractor engine was started normally. Approximately 3 hours later, in the same swamp area, but away from the road where the work crew was cutting hay, he surreptitiously, because of the German in charge of the crew and SS guards in the otherwise deserted area, observed a circular enclosure approximately 100 to 150 yards in diameter protected from viewers by tarpaulin type wall approximately 50 feet high, from which a vehicle was observed to slowly rise vertically to a height sufficient to clear the wall and then to move slowly horizontally a short distance out of his view, which was obstructed by trees. This vehicle, observed from approximately 500 feet, was described as circular in shape, 75 to 100 yards in diameter, and about 14 feet high, consisting of dark gray stationary top and bottom sections, 5 to 6 feet high. The approximate 3-foot middle section appeared to be a rapidly moving component producing a continuous blur similar to an airplane propeller, but extending the circumference of the vehicle so far as could be observed. The noise emanating from the vehicle was similar but of somewhat lower pitch than the noise previously heard. The engine of the tractor again stalled on this occasion, and no effort was made by the German driver to start the engine until the noise stopped, after which the engine started normally. On April 26, 1967, the witness appeared at the Miami office and furnished the following information relating to an object presently referred to as an unidentified flying object he allegedly photographed during November 1944. Sometime during 1943, he graduated from the German Air Academy and was assigned as a member of the Luftwaffe on the Russian front. Near the end of 1944, he was released from this duty and was assigned as a test pilot to a top-secret project in the Black Forest of Austria. During this period, he observed the aircraft described above. It was Sauschwitz-shaped, about 20 feet in diameter, radio-controlled, and mounted several jet engines around the exterior portion of the craft. He further described the exterior portion as revolving around the dome in the center, which remained stationary. It was his responsibility to photograph the object while in flight. He asserted he was able to retain a negative of a photograph he made at 7,000 meters. According to him, the above aircraft right was designed and engineered by a German engineer whose present whereabouts is unknown to him. He also assumed the secrets pertaining to this aircraft were captured by Allied forces. He said this type of aircraft was responsible for the downing of at least one American B-26 airplane. He has become increasingly concerned because of the unconfirmed reports concerning a similar object and denials the United States has such an aircraft. He feels such a weapon would be beneficial in Vietnam and would prevent the further loss of American lives, which was his paramount purpose in contacting the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Where are they now? During the war, especially the latter part, German U-boats made frequent trips to the South Atlantic, South America, and Antarctica. Germany also set up floating meteorological buoys in Antarctic waters and weather stations on islands located between Antarctica and the tip of South America. The SS Russia, Rassansiedlung's Hauptamt, Race and Settlement Bureau, began in 1942 to take women of Aryan descent, Volksdeutsch, from the Ukraine solely for the purpose of transporting them to base 211, 10,000 women between the ages of 17-24, blonde and well-proportioned, were recruited for the project along with 2,500 Waffen-SS soldiers serving in Russia. The goal of this massive undertaking was to create a colony at base 211 suitable for habitation and continued development of the Thule-Vrl technology. It is believed that both the Thule and Vrl Gesellschafts evacuated that technology to base 211 at the close of the war under SS General Kammler, who was in charge of Germany's most secret weapons programs. Two U-boats that surrendered after the war in Argentina are also believed to have carried cargo and high-ranking SS to base 211. Both boats were empty upon surrender, with the crews refusing to disclose their cargoes and destinations. Operation High Jump. Looking for Nazis. In 1947, the U.S. Navy under Admiral Byrd conducted Operation High Jump. The expedition to Antarctica involved 4,000 naval personnel and 13 huge ships, including several large airplanes and helicopters. The goal was to map and catalog all of the coastline of the continent, including minerals and wildlife. The entire expedition was to last 6 months. During the expedition, a base was established at Little America, a coastal bay, and a tent city was constructed where aircraft could be maintained for the survey. Several teams of explorers were sent out to various corners of Antarctica with large-format cameras for the photographic survey. When the crew photographing the region directly southwest of the Australian continent arrived, for their mission they were shocked. They radioed back that the coastal region was free of ice and that the water was 38°F. They continued to take photographs and later returned to process the images.